It's all about obviously matching what you do in the gym with how much you're eating and what fuel you have, where you are in terms of obviously your prep and how either loaded or how flat you will be at that given time.
Yeah.
Now, my compound work is generally going to sit anywhere between 8 to 12, maximum 15 reps. In a contest prep, I actually bring my repetition ranges down slightly because, again, you don't have the fuel coming in to be able to facilitate higher rep range work.
Okay, yeah.
We all know that higher rep range work requires a lot of glycogen, right? If you are already flat and you are limited on the amount of glycogen that you have, doing sets of 15 on a compound movement makes absolutely no sense because you just don't have the energy to be able to facilitate that work.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media. I'm Scott McNally, and back with me is Kuba Chellin. You guys enjoyed that last episode, so we're back. We've got a whole topic today. Kuba's going to lay it on you, and we've got a couple listener questions. We've got a training review at the end. If you guys have any questions that you want to have on the show, we're not going to make it like a big Q&A show, but we're cool taking a few questions, plus you guys commenting and all that stuff. It definitely helps us to boost the show up. So thank you for all your comments. Kuba, they came up with like 500 names for the show for us.
I didn't actually see that, and I was impressed. So some great suggestions, but we are still more than happy to take suggestions, and we'll let Scott, the producer, pick an appropriate name for the show, and then we can go with that.
It's funny because back in the day, like, you needed a name when you had an audio-only podcast, and now people could care less. They just want to see, like, IFBB Pro shares trading secrets. That's all they care about, you know what I mean? Like, to get more views. But people know what's up. They see the name. They see your name, and they know that we're talking about training. I think that it's pretty self-explanatory. So listen, what are we going into today, man?
Oh, man, it's an exciting one because today we're actually going to cover training to match your fuel intake. And this is more of a deep dive on understanding what training application you need to take at different stages for your off-season and prep.
Okay. And it's in part, you're starting a diet now. So this is something that's getting really important to you, right?
Yes, sir. So I'm actually, well, I can't remember the exact, but I'm probably about 16, 17 weeks out. Whatever weeks out I am competing this year and I'm in contest prep. I don't know how many weeks out exactly I am because I've kind of just been stuck into the prep and things are moving well. So I'm not really counting out the weeks. It's just more so about day to day for me. But training on contest prep and matching your fuel intake with training. Now, a lot of people are probably wondering, what do I mean by matching your fuel intake with the training? And it's very simple, right? Your training should be reflected by whether you are in a calorie deficit or a calorie surplus. So your training will change over time as you descend back into a deficit. So there's certain methods that you will use in a calorie surplus that allow you to have productivity in certain situations when your fuel intake is higher. So when your calories are higher, that in essence will facilitate certain types of training and set extensions and intensifiers. So I think we need to start from the very, 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 very bottom, and we need to cover off-season training and more so fuel intake and what it means having more calories in an off-season and what it actually allows you to do in the gym, right?
Okay.
So, when you are in a calorie surplus, naturally, to a point, you will have better recoverability on the gym floor. Now, being in a calorie surplus, you will have an abundance of glycogen in your muscle. So you should never be in a place in an off-season where you are flat and you don't have pretty much bursting amounts of glycogen inside your muscle, right?
Right. Yeah, of course.
Right. So knowing that, this is where you can actually add set extensions such as drop sets, rest pause sets, widow makers, set past failure. So every single set extension that you can think of, if your recovery allows you to do it in off season, this is your time to actually sprinkle that in on top of your programming because you are in excess of calories. And generally, this type of training requires high amounts of energy and high amounts of carbohydrates, right?
Yeah.
So in an off-season setting is generally where we can afford to play around with volume and increase the training volume, whether it's directly by adding extra sets, right? The easiest way to increase volume, or indirectly increasing volume, indirectly, through set extensions such as drop sets, rest pause sets, and all the pretty much stuff that's more demanding and you would put in a bracket of more metabolic work, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So knowing that, this is where we talk about matching your training for different fuel intakes. In an off-season setting, it's basically a go. You can progress your sets, you can still add those set extensions, and you will have absolutely no issues recovering from them session to session and being able to have a progressive training block until you reach a point where you need a deload, reset, and go again. However, the game completely changes as soon as you start going into a calorie deficit, because then you are going to go into a place where you are not as glycogen loaded anymore. You are in a calorie deficit, which means that to a degree, you're not going to be able to stay constantly full in the gym. It's just not possible, right?
Yeah.
At the beginning of your diet phase, you won't feel it and it won't be as significant because you have higher body fat levels. So your recovery capabilities are still quite high. But your priority in a contest prep whilst you are dieting is staying as strong as possible. We know what built the tissue will hold it there. And I always tell people, right, if you can stay strong in a contest prep and you are not adjusting your form and execution to stay strong, you will stay big. It's literally as simple as that. The only time I have ever seen people lose muscle tissue in a contest prep is when the variables at hand wasn't accurate, whether it's the nutrition, recovery, or training, and they got weaker. The simple, easiest, and quickest way for you to get weaker in a contest prep is by adding set extensions, drop sets, and all the work that requires higher amounts of food to facilitate it.
Yeah.
So this is where the pendulum swings as you start to shift into a contest prep. And the first port of call, the first action you should take as you start a contest prep is pulling out any set extensions. So personally for me, the second I start contest prep, any exercise that I have a set extension programmed in, and through a set extension, it could be anything. It could be a drop set, it could be a rest pause set. It could be anything that you do to extend that set. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just a set extension, right? It all brings about the same goal. For me, the second the transition is a calorie deficit, whether it's a contest prep or a simple diet, that is the first thing to come out. And that in itself should see a decent enough reduction in volume, which then in turn gives you a lot more recoverability to be able to stay stronger. And even to a degree, at the first portion of your contest prep, you should still see your performance retain, hold, or even progress throughout the first portion of your prep if you have all your variables set. And obviously, if you are going to contest prep off the back of a health phase, and you are also introducing some of the special supplements and special sauce and extra creatine, that extra creatine should not only work as a tool to prevent muscle loss, but it should also work as a tool to increase performance. Yeah. Now, knowing that you are already in calorie deficit, you're not as glycogen loaded, it only makes sense to stick to working sets that are not going to be quite demanding and are not going to be more so biased towards metabolic stimulus and, you know, trying to get a pump. Because how are you meant to chase a pump or even get a pump to the same significance as you do in an off season when you don't have the food to support that?
Yeah.
So this is where I think people make a massive mistake with training as they go into a deficit, especially deep into prep. You have to accept that the pump is probably not going to be there, nowhere near to the same degree as it was in an off season.
Yeah. It's a different game. It's a different game. All this, by the way, I just want to say too, all this, by the way, hinges on your training having already been in a good place to begin with, right? You're in a position where you have the right amount of volume for you. Now you pull those set extensions out and now you're able to have that increased recoverability. But you're, because I think that it is a different topic, so I don't want to get us off on that. But I think that this hinges on already having that foundation. You're not overdoing it. You know, you're not trying to do push-pull legs 6-7 days a week already. Because I see that in guys. They listen to us talk, and they say, yeah, I want to train like Kuba, but they're training 7 days a week, you know. So just to throw it out there, all those things have to be fixed first in order to get where you're talking about. Sorry, I had to jump in and say that.
Yeah, it's a great point, to be honest, because in order for all this to work, everything that I've just spoke about, right, you need to have your set programming. If you do not have set programming and you don't know how much work you do for each day, and your training is, I wouldn't say instinctive, because it should never be instinctive, just that you shouldn't eat instinctively.
Yeah.
You should know how much work you are doing on each and every single day. And then it's much easier to transition to a contest prep and knowing that, right, this session I've had 17 working sets, and out of that 17 working sets, I had 3 or 4 sets that I had set extensions. Mm-hmm. Pulling those 4 sets out gives you a lot more breathing room to actually recover and then be able to continue progressing into your prep.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, there's nothing more demoralizing than someone going to a diet phase and losing strength, losing size. And I think majority of that really happens through people not managing the training volume correctly and not really managing or matching the training style with the fuel intake that's coming in. And you will see a lot of, you know, top pros do drop sets and all these set extensions in even a contest prep, yes, but is it something that's going to work for you? I very much doubt it. And could they potentially do better without doing all that work? Potentially. And another consideration is these guys are probably still eating 600, 700 grams of carbohydrates. Mm. So that is probably not applicable to the 90% of public watching this, right? Mm. So if you have not got a program set, first, make sure that you have your programming set. And if you are working with a coach, he should take care of that. I mean, do you work with any clients at the moment that don't know exactly what they are doing across each and every single session?
Ideally, yes, they do, you know.
Exactly. Now, how much easier is it for you to manage their training going to prep, knowing that you know the recovery is going to take a hit? It's much easier for you then to manage and be like, right, Steve, you're not recovering from these sessions. All of a sudden, you're losing a lot of strength. These sessions are the ones that are most demanding. This is the session that we will lower your volume slightly with.
Yeah.
Now, in order for you to be able to do that, somebody needs to be following a set plan.
Absolutely.
And this is what I truly believe. There needs to be a foundation built. From that foundation, you then build up your training around it into an off-season, and then potentially be able to progress your stimulus in an off-season through additional work, additional sets, set extensions, rest pause sets, drop sets, when your fuel intake, your calories are high, right? So you build up to almost like your maximum tolerance. And I'll give you an example, right? On my push sessions, my maximum is what I can recover from is around 18 working sets total for my chest, shoulders, and tricep.
Okay.
And I can recover from that every 5 days.
Okay.
Now, that's my absolute peak. And what that means is, the second I go into a contest prep, that's my baseline set. First thing, I remove the set extensions, which then allows me to have more buffer time and allows me to hold that static volume for a little while until I see a slight drop off in training performance. Now, generally, how to gauge that? You will get to a point in a contest prep where you will do certain sets, and you will notice that you either lose a pump or you lose performance significantly into these sets. This is where you would simply remove that set and focus more so on the quality on the working set that you had prior to that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So this is where people have to always be mindful of what training style they do and how they approach the training in order for the training to be able to match how much fuel is coming in at that given time. It makes absolutely no sense for people to try to do all these set extensions and metabolic work, which requires a high surplus in a contest prep. It absolutely makes no sense. And I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes people make when it comes to trying to hold muscle tissue in a contest prep. And in turn, I think this is where a lot of people put themselves into a state of massive fatigue and then, you know, having to almost grind through these sessions and chase a pump, which then it's not going to be existent. And it's something that I notice with a lot of guys who don't have a deep understanding that training doesn't always have to reflect in a massive pump, especially in a diet.
Yeah. And it's hard to do that because you feel like the pump is satisfying. The pump gives us that sense of, hey, I accomplished something. And even though I'm losing fat and I've been somewhat depleted, I feel like I'm stretching my shirt out now. You know what I mean? It's a good feeling, and people want to get it. So I get it. I get where they're coming from, and I've been there, you know?
Yeah, I completely understand it as well. But the last thing you ever want to do whenever you prep is chase a pump. I just don't think it's ever going to lead to any good outcomes, because all that happens, Scott, is people just start doing extra sets, extra reps, trying to get a pump, and all they're doing is just depleting more and more.
Yeah.
And they're not actually getting any quality work, right? And we both know that now, with all the evidence that's going around, and anecdotally, we know that the quality work is what's most important, right? It's
Absolutely.
Not just the work. If it was just the work that was important, we could literally stay at home and just do press-ups, get a little pump, and we wouldn't have to go to the gym, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the basically the novel stimulus, doing something in some way to trigger that growth. And it doesn't have anything to do with the pump. It's just, look at the human body. I mean, if we just say, hey, I'm a human body that's doing some activity in my environment, my body is going to be triggered to produce muscle because that stimulus was hard enough. Or, you know, my body recognizes, hey, we don't need to keep this muscle on. At the end of the day, the body doesn't want to hold on to new lean tissue. You know, it's metabolically expensive to have muscle, and we would rather be more economical. Our body wants to be as light as possible, you know, it be as thrifty as possible, so it doesn't need to have all that muscle on there. And really, man, I'm with you that it's just about getting that trigger in your training, which has no relationship to the pump, really. A pump is a nice added bonus, but it's not what's going to keep the muscle on. I agree 100%.
Yeah, pump is literally a byproduct of what you do in the gym, but you have to remember that the pump is not always going to be there when you are trying to get lean, especially at the level that's required to be competing, right?
Yeah.
Christopher Barakat, you've heard of Christopher, right?
Of course, yeah, great guy.
Yeah, so he actually did a little bit of an experiment on himself when it came to, he did a contest prep. And I can't remember exactly, and Chris we can probably pull it out from what Chris actually did. And he actually did an experiment where he did some tests to actually see how much muscle he held throughout the entirety of the prep.
Okay.
And his volume over time actually came down a lot. And as a natural athlete, to be able to retain the amount of muscle that he did, just focusing on training performance, staying strong, not chasing a pump, I think that gives us a great reference point of what we need to be looking at, especially adding a little bit of creatine on top of that.
Yeah.
Because we both know having the ability to sprinkle a bit of creatine on top of this only allows us to have much more chance of growing into the show, but also making sure that we absolutely will not lose an ounce of any muscle tissue if we play our cards right going into that prep, and making sure that the training and the fatigue around the training is managed well. But we also have to make sure that we are putting the work in that is going to be the base of that, because all this that we're talking about, right, it is only applicable if you are truly putting the work in the gym floor. If you are not working hard, you can forget about all this that we're speaking at, because it's not going to be applicable in any way, shape or form. So we definitely need to make sure we kind of throw that caveat in there, because I think at the moment we've got a lot of theoretical bodybuilding that's taking place.
Yes.
I think people are living the theory instead of practical world. And I get it all the time on some of our posts about training. It's like there was one comment the other day actually on a post that I made, and it was like, taking so much rest is not optimal. I was like, according to these studies, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, listen, no disrespect, but these studies are complete dog shit. They are made on people who have no idea. They are made on people who have no idea how to train. I mean, none of these guys are doing remotely anything close to what we are doing in the gym.
No.
So it's like, this is what I mean. It's like, I don't know where we've seen this shift in the industry where people are looking more so for theoretical evidence that, don't get me wrong, it should be applied to a degree, but they refuse to see what's practical. And what we are talking about even right now, it's all practical evidence that I've seen with myself, with clients, and I've done over and over again. I've made the mistakes and I've seen it happen with my own eyes, seeing what happens if I do this or I do this. Yeah. Now, there's no better study that can be done apart from the one that we do ourselves with our own process, and we also do with our own clients. I mean, we've both worked probably with hundreds and hundreds of clients, right?
Absolutely.
Many on the stage and everything else. So we know how this process works. And the geezer that actually commented, it's not even a bodybuilder. It's just a guy that does some studying, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
he doesn't have a place. Geezer, you know, I'll tell you what, though, man. Here's the thing. I think at least we have this at the channel here. I think the majority of the people that are listening to this show are on our side with this. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, I think it's just a shift right now that's happening. It's kind of a new thing, really. You know, there really weren't any studies in the past. So now we're seeing all these studies. And I think people want a black and white answer. You know, new people, they want to be told, hey, this is how you do it. This is the way. And it's not as, what we're talking about, I got to tell you, man, it's not as black and white and it's not as easy. And there's going to be variables between everybody. I wanted to ask you, though. So you said on your push day, you're doing about 18 sets, right? 18 working sets. And you're able to repeat that every 5 days. So I would consider that to be a decent amount of volume, probably more volume than my body would be able to handle. I'm probably going to be lower than that. In fact, I'm surprised because I know the intensity you push, which tells me you've got an ability to hand, you've got some pretty good recovery on your side. Just to take this a step further, of those 18 sets, how many of those are like a compound chest movement?
See, that's a great point, because not all volume is created equal, right? So out of that 18 working sets, there will be 6 sets of actual compound work.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, and then I had a kind of a follow-up then. So of that 6 sets, when we're talking about bringing the volume back as needed, as we get further into the prep, would any of those sets be removed as you get closer to the show? Will you be doing less of those? Because I consider those 6 sets to be the main meat and potatoes then of what your workout is. You know what I mean?
So that is a great question, because the way I structure training, right, and it's going to follow on with just what we've just been speaking about, right? It's all about obviously matching what you do in the gym with how much you're eating and what fuel you have, where you are in terms of obviously your prep and how either loaded or how flat you will be at that given time.
Yeah.
Now, my compound work is generally going to sit anywhere between 8 to 12, maximum 15 reps. In a contest prep, I actually bring my repetition ranges down slightly because again, you don't have the fuel coming in to be able to facilitate higher rep range work.
Okay, yeah.
We all know that higher rep range work requires a lot of glycogen, right? If you are already flat and you are limited on the amount of glycogen that you have, doing sets of 15 on a compound movement makes absolutely no sense, because you just don't have the energy to be able to facilitate that work, right?
Absolutely.
So my preference, because my goal is to stay as big and strong as I physically can, I would avoid removing sets from the compound work.
Okay.
They are straight sets. They are sets to failure, not pass failure, and generally done in rep ranges of 8 to 12 repetitions in a contest prep. Generally, when I will start to pull the volume away, is always going to be isolation work. Why? Isolation work generally is always going to be done in slightly higher rep range.
Yeah.
Higher rep range work does not lend itself to have the biggest benefits in a contest prep when you are getting quite lean and your food is not high. So my preference in that instance where I know my volume needs to be lowered, I would potentially pull one set away from my isolation work from my chest, one set away from my isolation work on my delt, and one set from my isolation work on my tricep, bringing the total volume down to 15 working sets, removing some of the higher rep work, which is going to create a larger demand on you at that given time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're still keeping that main meat and potatoes work in there. That's not going anywhere. If you're lowering the rep range, though, does that mean, because you're obviously still going to failure, does that mean you're going heavier when you start the prep than in the off season?
Oh, great question. Yes and no, because when I transition to a contest prep, I already have almost a set point in my health phase where I adjust my rep ranges slightly. So because generally, when you do go into health phase, your recovery capabilities are going to be slightly lower because you don't have that extra creatine going in, right?
Yeah.
So this is where generally I will go through almost a pre-prep phase where I already start to pull my training repetition ranges a little bit lower, more within that range where they will sit in a contest prep.
Okay.
But food is still quite high, so I don't really remove any extra work whilst I can still recover from that, right? But generally, I will not actually go heavier in a prep. I would prefer to actually, instead of doing a top set and a back off set, I would probably do two sets with the same weight, where the first working set will probably land me 11 or 12 reps. If that happens, I will take that set again with the same load and probably hit 9 reps.
Okay, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep, that makes total sense. I'm with you 100%. That was good. I'm glad I asked that then.
Yeah, that was a great question, to be honest. That was a great question, 100%.
Yeah, I think because at the end of the day, too, then, yeah, no, it just, it makes sense to me. And at the end of the day, those are those main six sets. That's really the most important thing. Even if you didn't, if you weren't able to get anything else in, even, I think you would still probably get the majority of your benefit from being able to still do those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that is the meat potatoes of the session, right? Yeah. That is where we get stuck into the big compound lift. So on my push session, this would be generally either a flat press and an incline press and a dip variation.
Okay. You like dips, huh?
So that would, yeah, I love dips. For when it comes to push work, dips cannot be beaten when it comes to the compound lifts.
Okay. I like the dumbbell incline press. That's my jam. I would go as far as to say I've had a love affair with that movement. Like I've fallen asleep thinking about it, woken up excited to do it, you know, so much so that I made sure I got heavy enough dumbbells for the home gym that I could train from home and have it right here at the house. Got the exact bench that I like using, you know, and that's my jam. Let me ask you this. So I don't know if this is completely related, but since we're talking about prep, then I want to know, do you change your exercises at all? Do you say, you know, as needed, do you go to machines instead of a free weight or anything like that?
This is exactly what I was going to get onto right now as the next step. Right. The big one. I'm going to upset you now, Scott, as well, big time, because I know you love your incline dumbbell press, but unfortunately, as we transition into a contest prep, what do you think would be the first movement for me that I would pull out?
You better not. That's all I got to say. You better not.
Unfortunately, mate. Unfortunately, it would be the dumbbell press. And I'm going to give you my thoughts and reason why, and then we can see if you're going to agree with me or not. Right. And again, I probably would pull it out. I wouldn't pull it out if you were so attached to it, but I would change the way you'd lifted it slightly. So I'm going to give you two perspectives, right?
All right.
Going into a prep, which body part do you think loses most strength and why?
I feel like a lot of people lose strength in their pushing movements. And I think that's probably, I would say, number one. And if I had to go with a number two, I might say legs. But I think that maybe that just has to do with a fuel source issue.
Right. a couple of things. Yes, fuel source issue as well, yes. But another thing is, as you drop that initial amount of body weight, you lose external bracing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the heavier you are, more weight you carry, more internal bracing you have. So the bigger you are, the more load you will lift. Weight moves weight.
Absolutely. Right?
So the first thing you will always notice whenever you are going into a prep is your push work will always take a slight hit initially. And the reason for that is you simply lose stability. You don't have the same amount of body weight to be able to support that sort of lifting. So My first port of call when transitioning to contest prep, if you are, for example, and I was coaching you, Scott, in your programming, you've got dumbbells in your push days. You've got a free bar squat or a safety bar squat in your leg day.
Yeah.
And you've got a stiff leg deadlift off the floor on your pull days, right? My first port of action would be removing the dumbbell work and replacing it with a machine on your push day. Reason why? A machine is going to offer you a lot more external bracing, which means that you can lock yourself into a machine. It's much safer. There's no moving parts. You lock yourself in and you have more stability, more safety, especially as you get leaner and as you lose body weight. Secondly, mentally, it's going to be less impactful because you've got a fresh exercise to get stuck into, which doesn't leave you with an emotional attachment to certain load.
Yeah.
Right? And you've got a fresh start there.
I like that. And realistically, that's a good reason.
Realistically, if you have been doing dumbbells, you are going to go into a machine and you are going to feel extremely strong in a machine. This is why I think there is merit to utilizing some free weight work in your programming in an off-season setting when it allows to happen, right? And where I believe free weights are the most applicable is always in programming deeper into the off-season when you are heavier. And again, we've talked about the fuel source around training, right, for prep and off-season, and how you should match your training to match your fuel intake. However, your exercise selection should also be dictated by where you are, whether you're on prep or off-season. So, off-season, you want movements that will challenge your stability because you have a lot more internal stability with more body weight, right? Going to prep, this is where you will move these movement patterns into movements that are more externally braced. So your safety bar squat would then move onto a hack squat. Your stiff legged deadlift that you're pulling off the floor would then potentially move onto a paused RDL, which is going to be giving you more bang for your buck because then you are forced to use less load and use more eccentric control. So you're reducing load exposure, and I think you increase your stimulus to fatigue ratio in doing so. So with taking these shifts with exercise selection, taking these shifts with your set extensions and volume, and again, whether you're coming up and down, all this will do is it will improve your stimulus to fatigue ratio going into contest prep, which then in turn leads to easier fat loss, better muscle retention, and potentially even if you do use creatine on top, you will recomp and potentially even grow throughout the first portion of your prep if you do make these decisions at the right time and pull the plug based on the feedback that you get from your body, and you are smart with your programming, with the training volume and exercise selection hand in hand.
Question.
Does that make sense?
Yes, question. Yeah. So now, and I think this is important because I think, you know, like I said, people are looking for a black and white answer. So when you say, I'm going to pull this exercise and switch it to this, you're not pulling that and changing it to something else out of dogma, because now we're in contest prep, right? But tell me the reasons. What would happen when we got to the point where you're like, hey man, let's stop the dumbbell press, let's go to a machine. What are you seeing to make that call?
So generally it would be done based off more so loss of strength, and that will happen as soon as you lose that first initial 10 pounds generally.
Okay.
So personally for me, whenever I use dumbbells in an off-season and I transition to a prep or a diet, when I lose my first 10 pounds and I go into any dumbbell press, I feel like Bambi on ice. I just don't have the same... I do.
Yeah.
I don't have the same power. I don't have the same stability. I don't feel as safe and powerful handling dumbbells when I am lighter.
I know what you mean.
But when you go up in body weight, it's not a problem because you just get stronger and stronger, especially as you start to weigh more. Your squat patterns, your dumbbell pressing, it's going to absolutely take off. But I did tell you, right, that I was going to mention another thing, right, which is if I'm working with Scott and Scott has an immense passion for dumbbells and he wants to keep them in, we probably wouldn't pull them out. I would probably keep them in, even though we know it's probably not going to be the most productive option. There is better options. However, if Scott wakes up and is excited to do a dumbbell press and is dreaming about it and he refuses and he doesn't want to take it out, then I will keep it in. However, what I would then say to Scott is this: Scott, we're moving into contest prep. You are dropping body weight. You're getting lighter. I want to keep you injury free. So what we are going to do now is adjust your setup with your dumbbell work. We're still going to keep them in. I'm not going to take them away from you. No. But what I want you to do now is slow down your eccentric even more. And I want you to count to two with every single rep that you take in the stretch.
Okay, down at the bottom. So you get to the hole.
Yes.
One, two, drive.
Gotcha. And then press.
Yes.
What that will do, right? Let's say if you're pressing 160-pound dumbbells for 10 reps, right?
All right, we can pretend that.
That's fair to say, right? So Scott's been pressing 160s for 10 reps all his off-season. You know, he's smashing them out of the park. Making that change in the way you perform that lift will reduce the loading massively.
Absolutely.
So this way...
I lost your picture, Cuba.
1 second, sorry. Whoa. So, this way, we get to keep an exercise that you absolutely love. We get to keep you nice and healthy and productive and safe throughout the contest prep because the load exposure is going to be reduced significantly through addition of extra tempo.
Yeah.
And the pause in the stretch. Like, if you're pressing 160s for 10, you're probably going to have to drop down to 130, if not lower.
Oh, yeah.
And you're probably going to get eight reps. So this way, you're staying safer. Your connective tissue is not getting as much of a beating, but you are still getting a very high quality amount of stimulus, which is what we are always looking for. So... all the listeners, whenever me and Scott speak about anything on this show, we do not speak in absolutes. There is always something that we will have to adjust based off someone's preference. There is nothing in this game that is set in stone. There is no must-do things and there is no rules to this game. However, as long as you are aware that something might be a better option, then we're all good.
Yeah.
And as long as you're making... As long as you're making an informed decision about the action you take and you understand that every action has a consequence, whether it's your training or your diet or the drugs you take, then we're good.
Yeah. You've also got people that might be training from home, like myself, you know, and I'm lucky enough to have a chest press machine, so I could make that change, but not everybody's that lucky, you know, and there are going to be some things that, you know, hey, these are my limitations. This is what I'm capable. These are the options that I have, you know. I mean, I've met guys that say don't even have a hamstring curl at their gym. I mean, that's not Ultraflex. Wow. You guys have everything you need over there, but believe it or not, gyms like that do exist, you know, so... yeah, I'm just saying, I guess that's one other thought, too, is like, well, what are the options you guys have to work with? Or we do have a chest press machine, but every time I use it, it hurts my shoulder. It's garbage, yeah. You know?
Now, look, I know that there's probably been a lot to take in with what we spoke about today, but if people have questions and they want us to cover all the questions, what we can do separately as well is if we do get like 30, 40 questions off the back of this episode... we can probably do a Q&A episode and cover every question to keep people happy as well, especially the people on the Patreon and stuff like that, if they've got any specific questions to what we spoke about today, because we've kind of jumped about from topic to topic a little bit, but I think everything we spoke about kind of fell in like a bit of a...
common thread.
You know, in a bit of a role.
Yes, at least for me, has. My brain tracked the whole time. That made a lot of sense to me.
That's the most important thing. That's the most important thing. Because, look, I want people to take something away from this, and I want people to be able to implement this with their own training and with the clients, so that people can come away from the show now and be able to make more informed decisions about what they can do to get a little bit more from the training or whatever we speak about in every phase they do, off-season, prep, whatever it is. We want them to be able to get a little bit most from it. So do you want to do a little bit of a recap of what we spoke about? I know you took notes, and let's get cracking.
Yeah, I don't really have a recap, but I did want to ask you this. So I wanted to almost apply this to you today. You said you're 16 weeks out. So how long ago did you consider yourself entering the diet phase? And have you made any of these changes to your training yet?
Oosh. Awesome question. So let me just pull my check-in up. I do check in with myself, actually. So
oh, no kidding.
I do have everything sane. Yeah, of course I do. You've got to. Come on, Scott.
Right on.
I treat myself like a client.
It's important, man. You got to take pictures. I tell people that all the time. You got to take your own pictures, even if you're not working with someone. Otherwise, how are you going to be able to see what your progress looks like? And I know you. You've got everything written down. So that's perfect.
Always. Track everything. Look, if there's one thing that I like and I'm, you know, relatively okay at, is definitely this. But that's just one thing. Anyway, right. So my pre-prep diet phase. So, in fact, I'm going to take it from the start. Off-season into pre-prep, into holding phase and prep. Is that all right?
Yep, that sounds great.
Can I map this out for you and go over that? Right, that'll make the most sense, right? So, 31st of July was the start of my final push-up before prep.
Okay.
That push-up was a 14-week push-up, and it concluded on November, 6th of November. I started my pre-prep diet, which lasted 5 weeks. I dropped off around 14 pounds in that phase. And then I transitioned into my maintenance phase and holding phase 11th of December. The holding phase lasted 7 weeks or so. And I transitioned to my prep on 22nd of January, was my first week of prep officially.
Okay.
Do you follow?
Yep.
Right. The transition with training happened in my pre-prep diet phase.
Okay.
Why?
Because you're losing strength.
Going into a pre-prep phase. No. I wasn't losing strength, actually. In fact, in my pre-prep phase, I actually gained strength.
You did.
And I progressed all my lifts. Yes, sir. Why?
Oh, you're changing your rep. But you changed your rep range at that point. Is that where you changed that?
Adjustment in rep ranges, adjustment in training volume, where I actually brought my volume down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I, in terms of set extensions, personally for me, I am more of a fan of forced reps and widowmakers. So for me, I removed all the forced reps, all the widowmakers, and I also removed some of the rest pause sets that I had added.
Okay.
Right? So my changes to my training volume started in my pre-prep phase. As I started to lose body fat in that pre-prep phase, with the removing of the additional volume that I had with the rest pause sets and the force reps, I was able to progress my lifts because I had better recoverability.
Gotcha.
And creatine was still in place at that point with the pre-prep diet phase.
Yeah.
Right. Next step. Maintenance phase started with a deload. So I took a deload there, then I had a holding phase that lasted 6 weeks. So during that phase, I actually reset my execution and my loading across all my lifts. So it was a 20% reduction in load, roughly, on lifts that I needed. And I basically made sure that every single lift was executed with much harsher tempo, spending more time in the stretch. And basically, my approach was making every single lift as hard as possible.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I was able to progress my lifts gradually throughout my holding phase. Now, let me take you to prep. What happens in prep after the health phase? Creatine goes up from 5 grams to 10 grams.
Okay.
When your creatine goes up, when your creatine goes up from 5 grams to 10 grams, naturally, your recovery capability will increase.
Yeah.
So, training volume right now remains as is because my training capacity has increased through addition of extra creatine, allowing me to take even more progression on the gym floor whilst keeping my form standardized. So what do you think that means now in my first portion of the prep with me actually gaining strength and progressing all my lifts whilst losing body fat and losing body weight every single week?
You could be even growing muscle right now.
Yes, sir. Another thing that's quite important. Since I started prep 4 weeks ago, I have not made a single change just yet to my diet or expenditure. And I am still losing body fat, losing weight on scales-ish, but my pictures are looking significantly different week to week.
Okay, yeah.
So, this gives you an overview of how you can manage a prep in order to keep making that progress on the gym floor, because I have to do this for me personally. Why? I have a massive emotional attachment to training and training performance. If my training does not go well, I will be in a horrible mood and I will not want to do anything, because that is one of my sources of happiness.
Yeah.
And it's my passion, right?
Yeah.
When you have a passion for something, right, you kind of need to sustain it and need to keep it going, right? So for me, I need to think about what can I do throughout my off season and then transition into prep and even my health phase and then prep to be able to maximize my time on the gym floor. Now, maximizing my time on the gym floor doesn't just give me what I need mentally, but it also gives me what I need from a physique development standpoint, allowing me to bring a much better package when it comes to displaying a physique on the stage.
Sure.
Was there anything else? Or did I miss something?
No, this is good.
Are you trying to take it all in?
Yeah. And I think too, this would be interesting. I think this is something we should revisit. And I would love to hear along the way, the next time we do an installment, I'd love to hear an update. And I think the audience would too, to know like, hey, what's happening now? Where are things going? What are you seeing and how are you adapting to it? You know?
Absolutely. More than happy to do that. Next time I could probably cover my training frequency and what I've done, what I've trialed, and how my training has been shifting as well in a bit more detail. We can cover that too.
That sounds good. So we had a couple listener questions, and guys, if you want to ask any questions, then definitely comment. Anything that you're not clear on too, you know, definitely comment, because Cuba and I, we'd be happy to talk more in depth about that stuff. But one of our listener questions we had, guy was asking us about cluster sets, rest pause sets, and how do they work? He says, I have found them to be very good for my progress in training. But he wanted to have just more insight into how to implement them.
Amazing question. And if he has already listened to the show, he will know exactly when to implement them and how. So cluster sets are an amazing tool. And any sort of set extension, which again, cluster set, is more so going to be a fun way to completely destroy yourself. But again, where I would implement them is in a place where you are in a high surplus and you are deep into the off season. So let's say, what's the fella's name?
It's like user PZ6HS6WI6F. Repeat that.
Let's just call him Steve.
Yeah, Steve.
So, look, firstly, if you are seeing progress with addition of these set extensions, amazing. Definitely keep them in.
Yeah.
Where I would definitely keep them in is always when you are in a calorie surplus, and ideally when you are in a place where creatine is implemented or creatine is a little bit higher. So, where I wouldn't implement it is in a diet phase or a phase where you are lowering creatine intake and your recovery isn't really the best. So always remember, set extensions are great. They're a great tool to increase your training volume, but only when your recoverability allows for that to happen. So food needs to be present. and to a degree, if you are an assisted athlete, you want to utilize these methods in a place where you are above the physiological range as well.
Yeah. So let me ask you then, out of the different types of set extenders that we can do, rest, pause, cluster sets, drop sets, all that stuff, do you have a personal favorite? Something that's just like, maybe, you know, maybe it's not even like, I like this because it's the best for my growth, but just like an absolute favorite of your own where you just get excited to do that one.
I would probably say a Widowmaker.
Oh, yeah. Can you explain to us what how a Widowmaker works?
Right, so a Widowmaker is probably is a never-ending set and on a leg press. Reason why. When you get to that failure point, what I like to do with Widowmaker is actually rest at the top, but I don't relax my legs. I keep my legs on, and I keep the tension of my quads on. I take the breaths, so let's say I failed on 10 reps, right? I won't rack it, I'll hold it, I will compose myself, I will breathe, I'll take 3 to 4 different breaths, so it's probably going to be like 4 seconds, I'll go again. Then I'll take again a few more seconds, go again, go again, go again. You basically go with a Widowmaker, you mentally break, because taking those rests between each rep, it just allows you to keep going and going and going. So the set end is largely dictated by your pain threshold. This is why I personally prefer a Widowmaker, because it's something that I did when I was like 15, 16 with Tony Megson, and I will never forget these leg days forever because the pain was just incredible. But if you complete that set, and the guy I was training with was satisfied, there's no better feeling in this world than that. My second favorite is a rest pause set. I do love a good rest pause set. So where I would implement that is, for example, on a pec deck. Let's say I've got, you know, 3/4 of a stack. I fail on 10 reps. I would then take 20 seconds rest, go again. So that would be a rest pause set, right? Where you take the rest and then go again, but go to failure. So it's not so much like a Widowmaker where you're just taking rest to get extra reps and just keep going and extend that set forever.
Yeah, I love rest pauses. I would probably take them in that order. I might like rest pause better because you can do more rest pauses than you can Widowmakers. You do a Widowmaker and you're done after that, you know?
Oh, yeah. So I agree. And to be honest, my preference generally is a rest pause set. Because if I do Widowmakers, the aftermath for me is just not worth it because I just don't recover from that at all. I just end up dead for weeks.
You know, the first time I tried to do a muscle round, Scott Stevenson's muscle round from Fortitude Training, I did it wrong, okay? And I was using the V-squat, okay? And Scott Stevenson's muscle round is 4 reps, then a 6-second break, then 4 reps. Is it 6 seconds or is it a 10-second break?
I'm pretty sure it's six.
Okay.
I think it might be 10, yeah.
I think it's four reps, then 10-second break, and you repeat that 6 times. That's what it is. And I didn't understand that he wanted them to be constant reps. He wanted it to... Ah, yes. I've got mine right over there. He wanted it to be constant reps, but... What I ended up doing was I would get 3 reps and then I'd have to pause, you know, and get a 4th rep. And then I treated it like a rest pause. So the beauty of the muscle round is that he only wants you to fail 1 time in the muscle round versus the rest pause is brutal because you're literally failing and then you're failing again. And if you do a 3rd part like the DC, then you're failing again. And with the Widowmaker, I mean, yeah, that's, I'm just agreeing with you, I guess, because man, you do a Widowmaker and you fail so many times. Every time you fail, you're taxing into your central nervous system. And man, you do that 20, 30 times, you know, into a set, you're cooked, you know?
Big time. This is why it's my favorite, but the least favorite at the same time, because I know if I do a Widowmaker, it's time for a deload, 100%.
Yeah. All right. We had a couple more, We had one from Andrew, and he says, question for Kuba and you, Scott. When coaching an athlete who wants to compete but needs more size, how lean do you think they should get before a growing phase, and how lean should they stay?
As lean as possible. And generally, if someone is willing to take it there, I will take them down to pretty much condition where it would be acceptable for around 4 to 5 weeks out.
Okay.
So the glutes are pretty much going to be in. And even though they don't have much size, it doesn't really matter. A leaner start point for anyone, even if someone is undersized, is going to lead to more growth and more size. Now, if someone gets in that sort of condition where they are truly there, so around 4 to 5 weeks out condition, I would then take the body weight up over 25 to 30 weeks by around a minimum of 40 pounds.
Okay.
So let's say this guy finishes at like 170, and I know he's lean, right? He's very, very lean. His glutes are in. If we really wanted to, we could push him hard and compete in 4 or 5 weeks' time.
Yeah.
From that point, I would push him up by a minimum of 40 pounds, and I would make sure that he ticks off 210 if he can. And again, if he can, if he manages it well, we could probably tick off 215 or even 220 if he manages it incredibly well. What will be a dictating factor for him to gain the 40, 50 pounds is adherence on the way up and his ability to eat. So what I mean by that is getting to that point with people, it is not hard. However, coming out of the other side, when hunger is high and someone needs to stay patient and someone needs to take the body weight up over 30 weeks, that's a different ball game. And this is where most people get it wrong. They'll add 15 pounds of body weight in 2-3 weeks,
Accumulate
a lot of body fat. And this is where that runway for progression is cut incredibly short, because I can tell you now, Scott, if someone gains the body weight that much that quick, generally the appetite will go pretty, pretty quick, and they will not be able to complete such a long push-up, and they will not actually be able to get as much body weight on them as they could have if they stayed more patient and stayed a little bit hungrier over time.
It's tough, you know, especially if it's the first time you've ever gotten in that kind of shape. You start adding food back in, and then you start getting that insulin, the blood sugars jumping up and down. And man, it's brutal, but I'm with you 100%. Anybody listening that's in that position, it is totally worth holding on, because you stand to make the best progress of your life, literally, you know?
Scott, I'll tell you one thing, right? I took 2 years off now from competing. I've made good progress, but I will never take 2 years off again. Why?
You did well with the rebound, huh?
Ask Dave Crossland.
Yeah.
I was eating 900 grams of carbs, and I was still, listen, Scott, I was still starving.
Yes. That's perfect, man.
And I was so patient coming up out of the show. It was the most productive push-up I ever, ever had. And I was literally 22 weeks post show, I was eating just under 1,000 grams of carbs, and I was still eating a meal, and I would literally feel 30 minutes after, I'd feel empty.
That's perfect.
But listen, Scott, it was probably the hardest thing I ever done.
Yeah.
But it was the most productive. So as you can imagine, I love prepping and I love bodybuilding, I love each phase. And with me knowing that I'm capable of doing that now, I will only ever need that 30-week window after a show, and then I'll be able to compete again, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I like that game plan. All right, one more question, and then we had that the training critique. Fitness McGee, he says, is there a way to train for bicep peaks when you don't have genetic insertions for them? So you got crappy biceps, basically.
Right. Unfortunately, I'm gonna be a bearer of bad news there, Scott. I am, and you know that, and you know that already. Unfortunately, you cannot change your bicep structure. You cannot change your insertions. You cannot change the shape of your muscle unless you put oil in it. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Right. So, what you can do is you can get them bigger, and if you can get them bigger, they will look better. you cannot target a specific head of your bicep to that degree where it will make a difference. You unfortunately can't. Certain movements will bias slightly different portion of your muscle that you train, but the difference is not that significant. I'm going to tell you now, and it will not really make any difference to the shape of your actual muscle. What will make difference, if you really want to change the shape of it, we both know, and that will be some oil use, which I don't think is ever a great option, especially in the arms, because it just shows, and I don't think judges like it. Yeah. Especially when you get guys that are going into front double bicep, they open up their arms and they close them, and nothing moves, nothing changes. That's when you know something is sitting in that arm.
Yeah,
and it's not a good look either.
Yeah, but you're right though. Like, more size is the answer. You know, if you have a 23-inch arm, it is going, like, nobody's gonna say, like, well, you know, you need more arms. You know, no matter what, like, they know you're doing the best you can. I did get that feedback from a judge one time. The literal words he said were, "Better bicep peaks." I was like, "What? What can I do? What can I do?"
Right, Scott. That judge should not be judging, in my opinion, because if a judge looks at a body part and he thinks that someone can actually change that body part,
yeah,
like, that's, come on, man, that's the stuff that a judge should know. I think
you gotta twist the pinky like this at the top, and you know, And how about this too? You know what? The bicep is only a third of the upper arm, right? How about we grow your triceps too, to just increase that overall mass? You know, it might not have the greatest peaks, but if you can stretch the sleeves on your t-shirt, you know, you're still gonna feel good about that, right?
Who was it that had freaky tricep? Rolly Winkler, he had freaky tricep.
Oh yeah.
Even when you look at Phil Heath, some of the best arms ever, right? Phil's bicep were great, but there wasn't really jaw dropping. Like, Phil didn't really have bicep peaks like Ronnie, right? But Phil's tricep is just nuts.
Yeah.
So when you saw Phil do like a most muscular or even a front double bicep, because his tricep was so hanging, that's what created more so the freaky shape. And as you can you see it side of my head, Phil Heath there. Wait.
Oh yeah. You got the Phil picture back there.
Yeah. I've got Phil, I've got Dorian, I've got Kevin, and I've got Jay coming soon. I've actually got Branch Warren there as well.
Nice. All right, listen, we got that training video. And listen, if anybody else too, if you guys want to send any training videos in, let me know. An ideal way would be to upload it somewhere and then send me the link. That'd be perfect, especially people from Patreon. If you guys want to send me any video for the show. And I knew, Kuba, we only had time for one today, but I knew that the barbell row was your jam. So I grabbed this one. And I know this guy needs some work on his back, too. So let's see what he's got here.
Let's go. Oh, listen, man.
He's definitely working.
I'm going to give him some credit there. It's actually a very good it's a very good row. I'm not going to lie. All right, let's see what the last reps are.
Yeah, I'll roll it back here. You want me to roll it back to any part in particular here?
Let's roll back to the first portion of the rep and then the last portion of the rep. Sorry, right. The set.
Okay, so here's the start.
Yep. Can you slow it down?
I don't think I can slow it down. No.
That's fine. Right.
Yeah, but I can roll it like this.
Let's do it. So the first portion of the rep, or the set. There we go. Right, let's let him do one more rep. Okay, now let's see the last couple of reps.
All right, let's see. I think that'd be about right here. Hold on, I'll hit play first, and then I'll go back in slow motion. All right, let me roll it back here like this. And you can see as he's fatiguing. And I can tell you too, Kuba, so this guy is somebody that I know personally, and he needs to grow his lats. His upper back is fine. His upper back is probably, I'd go as far as to say good, but where he's lacking is the lat.
Right. So if he's lacking the lat, his excess selection needs to reflect that. And if he wants to grow the lat, I don't think barbell row is the greatest idea. If he wants a really thick erector and a thick back overall, I think barbell row is a great option. So first, let's just break down the execution of the movement. Execution itself, not bad at all. But do I think he could get a little bit more from that? Yes. What I'd like to see there, just pause it there. Scott, pause it there. Right. See how his lower back's slightly rounded?
Yes.
So what I'd like to see him do is sit back into his hips a little bit more.
Yep.
And basically get his back a little bit more neutral. And how he can do that is sitting back into his glutes more so that he's more so going to utilize his glutes as well as his lower back for that stability and that base of support.
I like that.
Because if he's bent over barbell rowing with, and I've got a term for that, is a shitting dog posture.
Okay.
Which is, you see that, don't you? You see that?
I see what you mean.
He's leaving his lower back quite vulnerable. And this is where, especially as he's getting deeper into that set, he's getting a little bit more body English, which isn't a bad thing. A little bit of body English is completely fine in a barbell row. You don't want to just stay completely static because then realistically you're not going to use any load that's going to do any sort of benefit for you.
Yeah.
But if you are going to use a little bit of body English, you need to make sure that you've got safe posture. So sit back into your hips, get that lower back a little bit more neutral. And if he needs more lats, what I would like to see him do is take the bar path and drive it a little bit more towards his pelvis and keep his elbows tucked a little bit more. Again, it's not going to make the movement. It's not going to make the movement more of a lat bias movement, as we'd like to call it, but it will change the lift in a fashion where he will get a little bit more lat engagement.
Yeah.
So the best example on earth you can watch is definitely Dorian Yates doing that.
I knew you're thinking that.
Because,
yeah.
Oh, man. Come on, it's literally perfect the way he does it. And with Dorian, what Dorian does, he sits back into his hips. He is quite bent over. So Dorian is very, very bent over. And I would argue Dorian actually had less body English than this lad did.
Mm.
So if he can keep that spine a little bit more rigid and then allow his shoulder blades to fully, fully work, protract, and he almost wants to extend his rib cage away from his hands going to that stretch. And then think about driving the barbell up his thighs and into his pelvis. And then again, keeping that posture and almost lifting himself forward a little bit. I think that way, he's just going to get a little bit more from this. And look, the difference here is going to be 5 to 10%. It was a great lift. It's not really a lift where we have to break it down in complete detail. But he did ask us to get it, you know, get it assessed. And this is the points that I think would work well. Now, if he's looking to bring his lats up before he does a barbell bent over row, I would like to see him do a more of a lat bias movement. So a single arm pull down, making sure that it does target the lat, keeping that upper arm tracking right by his side, getting his shoulder externally rotated, and making sure that he absolutely tortures his lat before he then goes into a barbell row. Because then, if his lats are already completely trashed and he goes into a barbell row, the likelihood of him engaging his lats is going to be much higher because he's already got a juicy pump in his lats, right?
Agreed.
And changing his technique slightly to what we've just covered is also going to give him a little bit more bang for his buck and keep him a little bit safer in doing so as well.
I think you're absolutely right, man. Well, all right, Kuba, this was a great episode. If people want to follow you on Instagram, I'm going to have the link below. And they probably already are, you know, but if you guys aren't and you enjoyed listening to this, if you've been listening to this for literally an hour now, then you can go and catch Kuba in 1 minute bite-sized segments, giving you guys all sorts of freaking advice. And if people wanted to reach out to you for coaching, what's the best way to do that?
Instagram or link in bio for my email. And generally, it'll point you to my site where you've got a little box to fill in, and that generally gives me some of the info about them. So,
perfect, man. Anything you want to leave us with today?
That's it. I think
you left us a lot already.
Yeah, 100%. Look, if people have any questions, like I said, we're more than happy to cover whatever they need. So, We are more than accommodating at Think Big.
All right, guys. For another episode here at Think Big Bodybuilding Media with Cooper Chellen, I'm Scott McNally. Guys, we will see you soon. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.